Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things. I realised the other day that, you know, foreign athletes or professional racing drivers,
yeah,
they all have a specific way of talking, and
yes,
don't they? And I thought, if you were to just ask them how their journey to the supermarket went or how their breakfast went this morning, I think it would start in one of two ways. And it would, I think it would start with, it would, the opening gambit has to be either "for sure I push," followed by the other words, or it would be "of course for me."
Yes.
Dot, dot, dot.
I would say "for sure" is more likely.
Mm.
So you'd go, "Oh, Enrico, how was your breakfast?" "For sure, you know, the Rice Krispies still in the cupboard. which was, you know, for sure, pretty complex for me."
For me, for sure, it's obviously the for milk, me.
The milk, you know, the guys had worked really hard to put that in the fridge, so, you know, for sure it was pretty cold, but we work with that, and we get stronger, and we build.
Yes, we build.
And, you know, really excited, looking forward to eating the milk and the Rice Krispies, hopefully together. For sure it's going to be difficult, but for me, this is the goal, yeah.
We push. As
we push.
Yes,
we push. Always we push.
Or does that come afterwards? That comes after its maximum attack.
Also, they do sometimes. You go, "Enrico, thank you." "Sure."
Yeah.
Just, which is actually, I don't know if you've noticed this in the US, and I feel like it's a relatively recent thing, as in it's a sort of generational thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, in sort of, say, in a cafe or a restaurant, and you'll say "thank you," and there's a traditionally, a lot of American serving people will say, "You're welcome."
Yes.
But then there's a point at which they get tired of saying that, and you'll say "thank you," and they'll go, "Sure." And it sounds quite rude, and it's not. It's not meant
yes,
to be rude.
Yes, it's a clipped "sure."
Yeah, it's just a bit, "sure."
Yeah.
You go, "is sure the right word?" That? Anyway, never mind. So, where are you? I'm sorry, I can't remember. How have we arrived at this?
I was thinking this morning as I went for a run, I just thought, it's how professional athletes from foreign countries always start every single sentence, whether it's "how your journey to work went this morning," "how breakfast went." And it's either "for sure I push" or "of course for me." And I don't think there's much else. I don't know if there's many other choices unless I'm missing something. That was it, really. Do you know, so this week I've been in France for a couple of days off of Paris for two exciting unveils, actually. Now, one of them, I'm going to say, one of them's the new Renault 5, which I'm not allowed to talk about. I'm not allowed to talk about it. But they had a couple of classic Renault 5s in the auditorium kind of area where we were allowed to do filming and such. There was a couple of 70s ones in lovely 70s colours, like kind of chartreusey green and yellowy. And then there was a turbo, a mid-engine turbo in that lovely red. It's a specific red. It's almost an orangey red, I think. And it was glorious, with those polished, almost turbo VEC alloys, staggered alloys, with the body colouring in between the spokes.
Yeah.
Oh, honestly, I dwelled over this car for some time. And the interior is one of those interiors. I think it might be the best interior of the 80s, of a production car. I think it's up there. because it has the bright blue carpets with the bright red moquette seats, and those seats are a specific shape with the blue tram lines in it, and then the asymmetric steering wheel. I mean, it all just is bonkers brilliant. But so I thought I was allowed to. The cars were all unlocked. I said, "Is it okay for me to open a door and take some pictures and maybe do an Instagram story?" Open the door for the turbo. Nearly fell over. The smell of fuel was so high. I honestly, it's like I'd opened the door and Carl Weathers had dived out and punched me square in the face. I just fell straight. It was so overpowering. It was amazing. And I just thought to myself, if this had been the 80s and, I don't know, Jean-Claude had gone to work, Maximum Attack, and then got out for a fag, and then opened the door and got back in to, I don't know, carry on his journey or fuel up, the car would have just mushroom bomb exploded. It was so fuely. It was amazing.
Were you able to ask the Renault people if this was normal?
I didn't dare at all, but I did wonder whether or not if I had, it might start with, of course, for me. And so I wasn't. Or for sure, we continue. Or is that, no, hang on, is that foreign Pete Tong? For sure, we continue.
For sure, we continue.
We continue.
For me.
But you know, the reason why I'm telling you this is because there was a, you probably know about this geeky fact, but it had passed me by. In the days of the Renault 5, when it launched in 72, within a few years, one of the things on the options list was the gear lever location.
What?
Did you know this?
No.
You could option it with a 2CV or Renault 4, should I say, style hockey stick gear shifter coming out of the dash, or conventional going with the Times floor shifter. The choice was yours.
Those were options. It wasn't just something they changed with a sort of model year update.
Well, I asked this and I was told by somebody there, because I was quite confused, and they said, no, it depended on the trim level and stuff, that you could keep it as the OG coming out of the dash, like the gun handle, upside down gun handle, or the floor shift. And they had two there next to one another. I was blown away. How many other cars can you do that?
Was it? I wonder if so. The base models maybe kept the old umbrella handle because that sort of linked them to the Renault 4. But then to make the up models feel a bit more luxurious, they put the more modern floor shift. I don't know.
It might have been an engine change. I wonder whether the base model engine was the lowest power, the real boggo. And then they went for a larger capacity unit, which needed the floor shift because they designed it to go into some other stuff ultimately.
That's a good point. I'm assuming you couldn't just go, oh, I'm buying a Renault 5 TL, and I think I'll go with floor shift. No, actually, no, I'll have the umbrella. I don't think it probably wasn't within. Like, it wasn't an option in the same way that maybe a sunroof was an option.
Well, I haven't had chance to investigate this, because if we were professional on this podcast, I would have already researched this before discussing it, but I haven't. I just went to sleep last night and then woke up. But I'd love to know, because I just found that amazing. That is absolutely amazing. It's so French and wonderful.
These old fives, are they ones that Renault have had from new and have just kept for best, or have they restored these to as part of the promo process for the new car?
I think it's a combination, because I think they've got quite a few. There was no second generation five on display. They were only the first gens. Yeah, the ones with the cartoony face, which I thought was a surprise.
I think that second generation five, particularly in its original form, is a really neat car. Because it recognisably looks like its predecessor.
Yeah, but it's moved the game on enough.
Yeah, much more modern, and I think it's really stood the test of time.
Yeah,
and that's a strange thing that they wouldn't put one on display if they're.
I agree. I don't know. And when you see the final car, it seems even stranger. But, all I can say is that, the colours, the colour palette is great on the old cars and pretty impressive on the new cars. And And yeah, there was some fairly good observational stuff going on as well. In fact, while I was there, I was able to see and film a dacha as well in a different studio the next day.
Is this where you had your trouser disaster?
Yes, I did. I was just about to come on to that. Yes, if anyone was sat opposite me on the Eurostar coming back yesterday afternoon, I'm so apologetic if you were to see, I don't know, what looked like a skin-coloured walnut or a bit of brain hanging out. No, seriously, I did wear underwear. But I split my trousers in the crotch, getting it into the new Dacia Spring. So I'm not allowed, again, I'm not allowed to talk about that because it's under embargo, but we know it's the first time it's going to be available in the UK for the first time, right-hand drive. It's probably the cheapest electric car. I would say it's probably going to be the cheapest electric car you can buy new.
Do you know the price and are you allowed to say
I'm it? Not allowed. I'm not allowed. okay. Boo. But I mentioned the crotch split in the spring because the back seat space is not great. I had to sort of push
This is what caused the trousers.
I had to wedge myself in, and as I did it, we were on camera as well. I properly split it. And mentioned it on Twitter, and a chap called Bertie Redfern on Twitter replied back saying BBC Spring Crotch, which I thought was probably the best caption. I thought he wins the comments today. He totally wins. But you know what? I spoke to the designer of Dacia, who's a really cool guy called David, and he's a French chap, but he really likes British motorcycles and cars and obviously really embraces utilitarian design, which is obviously Dacia's kind of calling card, really. And he was talking me around the Spring. One thing I would say about the Spring is it's not available with alloy wheels, which I absolutely love. You cannot buy it with alloys. It's only available with hubcaps on the steels. And three designs of hubcaps, 14-inch rims or 15-inch rims. I mean, this is 2024, remember, Richard, but this is glorious. Yes. And I thought all the hubcaps were okay, but I said to him, just in conversation after he'd done the presentation, I said, would it be possible to take the hubcaps off and just look at it without the hubcaps, because they were black steels? Mm. And he went, yeah, for sure. He actually said for sure. And he took...
for sure.
And he sprung into action, excuse the pun, and and another technician took the hubcaps off so I could like record an Instagram story of it, what it looked like on black steels in this kind of beige colour that was quite utility UN spec, and then walk round to the other side to show what it looked like with the hubcaps. And I think the black bare steels, it's a Dacia look. It's a great Dacia look. It's a strong Dacia look. So, yeah, but the other thing is while we were at the Dacia sort of studio, upstairs was an area where you could have refreshments, coffee and little cakes and things. And when they brought lunch out, all of the plates of food were labelled apart from a sort of meaty dish on a big platter. But there was absolutely no signage next to it. And because of our recent U2 chats about police convertibles, someone behind me who's a friend of the who's a friend of the podcast said, "Oh look, where the meat has no name," and I thought it's really good. It suddenly became a U2 buffet conundrum, and I started singing, "I want to run, I want to hide," and then we decided that it was Bono who had a no-name meat buffet, and then suddenly being caught short after possibly some room temperature seafood, and
I've got the runs, I want to hide.
Yeah, she's running from door to door, just trying all of the handles to see if there's a pan in there. So he can quickly get rid.
I just because I couldn't remember. So the spring,
Yeah.
The Deja Spring is on sale in France now.
Yeah, this is its third iteration, actually. It came out in 2021 in everywhere apart from the UK, it seems. And then it got facelifted only about a year later to the shape that we've sort of been seeing around with the more Dacia DNA wide banded front. But the and then they've done a facelift and a mild tech lift again for this one that we get in right hand drive. But it still has the guts of that Chinese car, which it's based on, which is, I think, is called a Quid.
Chinese car?
Yeah, it uses the underpinnings, because I always thought it would use underpinnings of like a Zoe. But the Zoe is, because I couldn't understand this. And they said, well, because the Zoe was a standalone platform that's now quite old, and we can't share it with anything else. So therefore, I think they've decided to just lay it to rest.
I thought the Quid was a Renault, but Renault, wasn't it made in India? Am I imagining that?
Oh.
It was originally developed for the Indian market.
I know it was Asian mass market, so it could be Chinese and Indian.
Well, I guess.
And it was a piston car originally, someone told me. But So it's a complicated, it's a real hybrid of a thing.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder what it'll be like to drive. I just looked, though, in France, you can have a spring for the base model, the Essentiel. Is 18,400 euros, so that it weighs about 15.5 grand here.
Yes, hold that thought.
Okay, you see, I've said that, you've not said that, I've said that, so you're not giving anything away. Or 201 euros a mois,
yeah,
it says here. So,
but do you know what the cool thing about the cool, well, I think in terms of car porn, the great thing about the Dacia Spring is. It's obviously it's a budget fully electric car, which some people listening won't be interested in. But it's an electric car that weighs under a ton, and it's a 4-seat little family thing. It's not a sports car or anything like that. It weighs under a ton.
Is it very wee in person? Is it sort of?
It is a small thing. Yeah, not easy to get into the back of, shall we say, Richard?
It's a 5-door. Your trousers.
But, yeah, my chinos didn't survive that. They're in a crumpled heap on the floor.
I just wanted to say there's a message from a listener, Rampant Twattery. He's written to us before. I've seen it's a he. In fact, it is a he because he's put at the bottom, he signed it R Twattery brackets Mister. He's just pointing out, he picked up on your mention of the loos on the Eurotunnel trains being train spotting spec.
Oh, awful. Awful.
But he's pointed out the Eurotunnel have branded themselves to Les Shuttle. Which, written down, looks like Les Shuttle, which is a man who keeps pigeons somewhere near Doncaster. But
Les Shuttle.
Oh, it's Les Shuttle at your service.
It's just a really sort of like rubbish coach tour company that's based up north somewhere, isn't it? Where are you going today? Yeah. Oh, I don't know. How much fuel have you got on board? Oh.
Les Shuttle is Les's shuttles, but they can't figure out where to put the apostrophe.
Oh, yes. Is there one before and after the S? Just to really really to confuse people. Les is it.
Les S shuttle. Yeah, something like that.
Oi, Les.
Serving the greater Halifax area.
That's great. And it's actually a converted mobile library from a Renault Espace, isn't it? What's the traffic? It's 1F traffic.
School chairs screwed to the floor. Yeah, it's probably that. So you had a flying visit to France, but you didn't get to drive either of these cars that you also can't talk about.
Tragically not.
Static lookabouts.
Yeah, I didn't. I was spotting through the streets of Paris if I could see any interesting French cars. I saw a couple of Espaces of different... I do miss the Espace, you know. And I know we talked about MPVs the other week. I'm definitely compiling my list of... MPVs on sale now that nobody seems to take any notice of that should have probably some notice taken of them. So I think that's going to happen. But yeah, and I went there on the train, so because I couldn't be bothered to fly, frankly.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
If you need to get to Paris, I don't know why you wouldn't take the train. Well, I mean, obviously you've got to get to London first or Kent, but
you can't get
apart from that, it's nice, the train, isn't it?
It is actually. It was really good. I like the train noises. I like the French railway station alert jingles. They're very good.
Yes.
They're much more interesting than ours. They're just upbeat.
Is there one that goes bing bong bing bong?
Yes.
Doo doo.
It's lovely. Like it. But you know what? I have to bring the conversation back around to coach trips, because my daughter went on a coach. She went on a school trip last week, or the week before last, was it? A field trip to the Somme in France.
Oh.
And yeah. I knew she was going to find it quite moving and quite enjoyable. Really, she's enjoying history at the moment. But, oh, my boy, did I not expect for her to come back with the best of the best coach stories. So here we go. She gets the coach from school. Obviously, they go down to the tunnel. I track her on my phone. All is good. A few days later, on the way back, goes to the tunnel. Comes out to the tunnel and then goes to sort of around Kent and then stops and then just seems to be stopped for ages. Mm. I'm busy with work. I didn't think much of it. But anyway, she was late home that night. Turns out the coach broke down.
Mm.
And a lot of people had to get taxis home or jump onto another bus that was nearby that was smaller.
Oh.
Do you know how the coach broke down? Let me tell you. I have never known this. I mean, it reminded me of my school years of going to school on lovely ropey old coaches that we used to marvel at.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So she said the coach driver was dad. The coach driver was absolutely massive. She said he had to stop almost every half hour for a wee. But he would pull over and in front of everybody just walk to the back of the bus where there was a toilet, go into the toilet, and then walk all the way back to the front again and then carry on driving. Like, oh, that's like a walk of shame. So besides that, then when we got to the services, she said on the way back, everyone got off and got food and toilet, whatever, including the bus driver, the coach driver. When everyone got back on, the coach driver was the last one on. And he was so enormous, he shimmied round the steering column to get into the driver's seat and snapped the key off in the ignition of the coach.
Bloody hell.
With his actual body. I'm sorry. When she told me, I could not believe what I was listening to. I said, so hang on, the coach broke down because the driver snapped the key off with his tummy in the ignition. And she said, yes, that's what happened. I went, oh, my goodness. Has that ever happened before?
That's extraordinary. I mean, there's a number of things that are extraordinary about that. Like, was it a weak key or did he have a very powerful torso?
There's so many.
To exert that much pressure without him noticing that?
But can you imagine?
That's nuts.
Can you imagine the embarrassment? You've got a coach of 50-odd teenage school kids.
Yeah.
And you basically sabotage the coach with your own belly.
You have to go, all right, sorry, everyone, the coach has broken down. Oh, what's gone wrong with it? engine is broken.
I said down. This to her. I said, did everybody know the cause of it immediately? And she said, no. There was sort of a quick assembly of teachers and there was some hushed talking around the driver. Mm. I think it was quickly decided that the coach was going nowhere. With the key clean off in the ignition. So I'm like, oh, shit. It really tickled me. It really tickled me.
Because in my head, I'm sort of thinking that coaches, do you think even modern coaches still... Well, first of all, it's interesting to discover that they haven't moved to button start. There's no keyless.
Do you know what? Maybe coach. it should have been, shouldn't it? He could have put it in his breast pocket, like all coach drivers put things in.
Yeah, you've got to have something in your breast pocket if you're coach driver. But then also, I'm imagining a coach is still started. You know, we were talking the other week about cars that have like basically a sort of shed padlock key.
Yeah.
It doesn't sort of feel big or dramatic enough for what it's capable of doing.
That's right, yeah.
Starting at engine.
Yeah.
And I wonder if coaches are like that. I wonder if it was some absolutely shitty little key and it just got pinged, the end got pinged off it. I don't know.
It could be, couldn't it?
I'd like to know more. strangely about this. Also, what a fix. They're going to have to, I presume, just, you know, drill out or replace the whole ignition barrel, aren't they? And that's a bit of a faffy thing to have to do on an otherwise perfectly working coach.
You can use dentist tools and a strong magnet. That's what my dad did once with... He snapped the key off because it got weak and he kept using it. He snapped it off in the Avenger once and used some dentistry-type tools. And a very strong magnet. It took an exceptionally long time. I'm pretty sure it took him a whole day, but my dad's quite persistent, so he did. And that worked. In fact, I might still have that snapped key somewhere, like a complete...
What?
I don't know why I've got it.
Why have you got a snapped key?
I found that because it was the original Avenger key, which had the Chrysler... It had a really nice Chrysler blue handle on the key. It was a nice key.
Oh.
It was a Chrysler, and it's seated approximately, I don't know, six, I would say, at a push.
No rear seatbelts, so you can
no rear seatbelts, so good enough for the love shack.
It seats 6 to 8,
yes,
if it's 1974.
Yeah.
What a weird thing to happen.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. I was giggling for a long time. I thought I'd want to share that on the podcast because nobody got hurt, I don't think, although. I should think the coach driver's rethinking his life a little bit.
Do you think coaches break down a lot, though? Because I feel like we used to get a coach to school, like as in there was a company that ran a coach service, like a private bus service, basically, you know, because the actual buses didn't serve
same
the
for
route
us. Same for us.
Directly.
Yeah.
And I remember there was this one guy called Martin who was the coach driver for a while. He had incredibly bad teeth that may have been related to his furious appetite for cigarettes. And he was stick thin, which again, may be related to his furious appetite for cigarettes in place of food. And he had this coach, which it was really sort of noticeably noisy.
Oh, yeah.
Like the engine sounded really gruff. And I remember like we asked him about it once. Because we're kind of fascinated.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, yeah, got the... And he told us it had an engine replacement and the new engine was out of some truck or other and it was way more powerful. And he used to drive it really aggressively as well. Like, he was a keen fan of using all the revs in an enormous diesel engine. And then one day, the coach... was audibly not well, and suddenly steam started coming up through one of the access panels on the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Michael,
and he had to pull over.
It sounds like my upbringing, Rich. It's really similar.
It's weird, isn't it? And that was one time I remember the coach breaking down, which may have been because Martin had authorised the fitment of an inappropriate engine and then drove it like a nutter. But I do remember the school coach driving, breaking down... More than that. There was once where it broke down, we had to pull into the car park of a hotel and then just sort of stood there for a bit until people started going into the hotel and using the payphone to ring their parents and stuff because it was too far to walk home at that point because we were in Hanforth.
I wonder if any listeners have got anecdotes of school, ropey school coaches or buses or even maybe taxis. But our coach company was obviously got the contract. And they had a selection of pretty bad coaches. I've actually discovered that one of the coach drivers was the co-owner of the company. They were brothers, the Harding brothers, I think, and Rodney. And Rodney apparently he was the mechanic as well. So he used to frequently turn up on the bus run with hands totally covered in oil and grease.
Yeah,
because he just obviously hurriedly finished assembling one of these coaches to get to do the school run, but it turns out that he died under a coach. It fell off.
Oh, God.
It fell off a jack or something and crushed him to death.
Bloody
which
hell!
Which is pretty sad.
Horrible way to go. Yeah,
but they ran a lot of 60s and 70s coaches, and one of them was so 60s. We used to call it the Heidi High bus because it did like 45 miles an hour, but it had amazing skylight windows. And a couple of them went on fire with children on board on the way back from school once. And the best one was those inspection panels you were talking about. I might have said this on another podcast episode years ago, but when the coach was at VMAX on the bypass part of the school journey, one of the inspection panels hadn't been locked down properly, and the wind going under the bus. Pushed the panel up, it started levitating.
Oh.
And it levitated about, I don't know, 6 inches off the floor until you. It was a deafening noise because you could hear road, engine, gearbox.
Yeah.
And the kids next to it looked down and you could just see, like, the whole differential of the bus just like there, and the girl started screaming, and I think one of the coach drivers said, it's all right, just don't touch it, it's all right, just don't. Proper casual. It's brilliant.
I think the coach company I wonder anyone else who grew up in my sort of neck of the woods up in Cheshire and South Manchester remembers this. There's this bloke called Ray Maddox who he used to come around and sort of keep an eye on the coaches. So he didn't drive one. He looked a bit like a scrap metal dealer. He always wore a leather jacket.
Oh, gosh.
And he had a beard. And he was just a bit, there was something a bit woo and a bit way about him. And
Ray Maddox.
And he started off, I think, when I started at big school, ours was the only coach route that he had. And it just sort of mopped up children from the greater kind of Wilmslow area. And it was a really old 60s coach with two front wheels, like two sets of front wheels. I can't remember what they're called. Was it a Bedford or something? But anyway, it's probably the coach builder that's the important part.
Yeah, it had four steering wheels.
Yes, yeah. Real novelty, but interesting at the time if you were...
It wasn't a thingy, not a Leyland octopus or whatever they called it, was it?
I don't think it was a Leyland, no. I can't remember now, but people will write in and tell us, I'm sure. But then he expanded his empire, and suddenly he seemed to have, like, loads of coaches doing all sorts. And he was based in Macclesfield, so he called it Macclesfield Executive Coach Company Association or something. And Mecca, for short.
Mecca?
And he went, I don't think you'd do that now. I think you'd go, that might land me in some hot water. I'll probably steer clear of calling my company Mecca because it's an acronym for Macclesfield Executive Coach, whatever it was. But yeah, I remember this. He'd be like, Ray Maddox of Mecca. Are you sure, Ray?
It's the leather jacket rings a bell, and also some very oily deck shoes. We used to see oily deck shoes as well, which my brother used to find. Yeah. One of them was called Ken.
And you know that his office is a porter cabin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my brother would always sit. See, I would always go towards the back of the coach. My brother would always sit at the front of the coach because my brother, having this mechanical obsession from an early age, used to want to watch the gear shifting, and he used to talk over the shoulder of the bus driver. And his favourite one to chat to was Ken. There was one called Ken who he said his top button on his shirt was so tight that his neck rippled over the shirt top.
Yeah.
Like a sort of overfilled pint of frothy beer. and one of his coaches had a pre-selector gearbox, which my brother was just, my brother would not stop talking about it. Greg was like, have you seen the pre-selector on it? It's amazing. You like select the gear and then like it puts it in gear like a couple of seconds later. And at the time I was like, Greg, I don't understand why that would be good, bad, ugly. I just don't have any idea. But it was a tiny little plinth with like a little nubbin on the top. It didn't look like a proper gear stick. And then you had
I'm sorry, but this is alarming that your brother would break the, I thought, cast iron convention that where you sit on the coach is related to what year you're in at school.
Oh, no. No.
What? Did you not have that?
Mm-mm.
You definitely, because you didn't get to go on the back seat until you're in sixth form on our coach.
Was that a written rule or was that just like...
No, it was just, it was prison hierarchy. Yet everybody knew it. And if sometimes a cheeky kid from sort of, whatever, because they like, second year seniors, as it was called back then, decided to chance their luck and go and sit near the back, then the sixth formers would probably kick his head in.
Yeah, there was, sometimes there was a bit of like, get out the seat, that's ours. But it wasn't, there was nothing written. It wasn't official. It was, you just...
No, this wasn't official. This was just, this is one of those things that everybody knows and yet nobody knows where it's come from. But yeah, it was very much the way you sat on the coach was sort of broadly defined by what year you were in. You just sort of naturally fell into that and you slowly moved towards the back of the coach as you
went. It's a migration. My brother put pre-selected gearboxes ahead of socialising on buses.
Interesting.
He's that guy.
I could see that.
Yeah, he's that guy.
Yeah. There was a coach driver that we had for school, after Gaptooth Martin, there was a guy
called What was he called, Tony? Gaptooth Martin?
No, he wasn't just Gaptooth. It was like all his teeth were too spaced out because maybe some of them had fallen out and they were all very, very dirty. It looked like he'd been servicing the coach with his teeth. I think it was just the tabs. Anyway, Martin moved on somewhere else. There's this guy called Tony, a big chap. Again, possibly he'd have a sort of a bit of, you know...
But he'd gone to the Shane McGowan School of Dentistry.
It was very Shane McGowan. Very Shane McGowan. He had reactor-like glasses as well, as I think a lot of coach drivers did around then.
I can't stand those. Can I say that?
No. Quite a look.
Yeah, awful.
Anyway, Tony, bigger chap, had... Two things about Tony. A much more sedate driver, which was reassuring. But he had a pet bird of prey that sometimes he brought on the coach. And he once passed around a pirated video of Dead Poets Society and let people take it home.
You're pissing on me. He used to bring a bird of prey to work on his coach.
Yeah. You imagine the driver's seat on a sort of 70s coach, then it's got just a chrome rail that kind of fences off the driving area. Yes. And the bird of prey would just sit on that.
No way!
So as you got on, there'd be this, I don't know what it was, a Kestrel or something, but as you got on, you know, you'd be coming up the steps and you'd look up and there'd be this fucking bird of prey eyeballing you from up by the driving seat.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
But yeah, he had this wasn't a regular thing, but for some reason he got hold of a dodgy copy of Dead Poets Society, and he'd said to one of my mates, when we were sort of in like fourth or fifth year, have you seen Dead Poets Society? No. Do you want to watch it? And he gave him this cassette, and then it was sort of passed around and then finally returned to Tony. But I knew it was hooky because it had burnt in time code on it, which, you know, you don't get from Blockbuster. So I don't know where he got it from, but it was hooky.
What a character.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It's just the things you wouldn't do, I suppose, now. You wouldn't bring a bird of prey on a bus full of children. It's probably best not to, in case someone gets their eyes pecked out. And you probably wouldn't hand round... Well, you wouldn't hand round a VHS cassette because no one would have the means to play it. But you know what I mean? Sort of, it feels like that was a sort of a level of interaction with the children that would be frowned upon.
Did any of your drivers used to smoke with the children on board?
I have a feeling that
I think one of
Shane McGowan faced Martin did, yeah.
Yeah, because you had the big slider window, didn't you? You had a huge slider window.
Yeah, yeah.
And did they put the radio on for you? Because most of our drivers would put the radio on, and it was sort of, they were quite flexible about what radio station.
Yeah. This, funnily enough, I was thinking about school coaches in this last week because of the sad passing of Steve Wright.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realised that he was a total fixture of essentially of British life, really, wasn't he? Right back to the 80s, because that's what we always had Radio 1 on the school coach. So I first heard Steve Wright when I was 7 or 8 getting the coach home from school. And at the time, that kind of zoo radio format with other people in the studio was such a massive novelty.
Yeah.
And the fact that he was doing sketches, you know, he had Phil Cornwell doing Mick Jagger and stuff, didn't he? And there was nothing like it that you'd ever heard. You know, the Breakfast Show at that point was... Who would that have been? Mike Smith, maybe, at that point? It was done pretty straight.
Yeah,
do
Mayo.
A bit of chat, play a few records.
Yeah.
And then on the way home, it was like this sort of mind-boggling explosion of sound and textures and things, and I'd not heard the like of it before. And I sort of thought, actually, you just sort of assumed Steve Wright was always there doing something like that. And I just... Sunday before he died, I happened to be in the car, heard him on Sunday Love Songs, and he's just there, isn't he? And then suddenly he was gone. It was actually quite taken aback by it.
I think his work ethic was obviously up there. But also, if you're listening to this and you're not British, Steve Wright might not be a very well known name, but he was a DJ that was a DJ for what, 50 years? I'm going to say 50 years.
I guess so, yeah.
Because he did, was he on Radio Carolina, that blimmin' ship? Pirate
yeah,
radio?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of that Radio 1 lot from back in the day.
Back in the day.
Ex Radio Carolina, yeah.
So, I mean, he certainly remodeled the way radio is and influenced a lot of the big names you have now, like Chris Evans and his kind of madcap approach to radio. Without
yeah,
Steve.
Yeah, no, I thought he sort of brought a new level of production values, which I know that he sort of always was such a radio nerd, as I think all the best DJs are.
Yeah.
You know, like Greg James is a massive radio nerd, isn't he?
He is.
It's no surprise that he puts a lot of effort into his show because he knows that radio is a unique format for certain things that you can do. But yeah, I think Steve Wright sort of he unashamedly used to go to the US and he would just like sit in a hotel room and just record the good bits off like radio stations in New York for inspiration.
Really?
And then he sort of he's an absolute nerd about the stuff, and then he would come back and try new things on his show. So I was just thinking about it because I was suddenly like, oh, God, that's
a soundtrack to a lot of
our
lives.
Original Radio 1 show just reminds me of being on the school coach in the 80s.
He had a very high-pitched voice as well. And with excitement, it used to go higher and higher and higher, very shrill at various points. I always noticed. Got a shrill voice DJ. But, Steve Wright, you had a hell of a body of work, let's say. And
yeah.
Also a Range Rover enthusiast, I think he
yes,
was.
The P38.
Yes.
I don't know whether he still had that, but yeah, famously the P38. Speaking of, in fact, he also, speaking of coach drivers smoking on the job,
yeah.
I remember, I can't remember who told me this, someone who'd been in his studio, until such things were officially illegal, he was a big fan of having the tabs on the go in the studio.
Okay. Smoking DJ.
Well, I think a lot of them, I mean, they probably all did back in the...
Can you imagine the smell of the ceiling of those DJ booths? Bloody hell!
Yeah,
better be rancid.
Imagine if you had to use the studio that had been used in that day by Steve Wright and Anne Nightingale.
Oh god!
Maybe Johnny Walker. I bet Johnny Walker liked a tab back in the day.
Yeah, Whispering Bob from the old Whistle Test, whatever he's called, Bob Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet he liked a few, didn't he? Like a gruff, he'd have a gruff camel on the go, wouldn't he?
Do you think, or would he have a pipe? He might have a pipe.
Oh, we might go pipey.
I imagine that the Radio 1 studios in the heyday of the sort of 70s and into the 80s, it's perpetually foggy.
Yes, not good for passive smoking, I would say. and also, you know what, there's another, I've got, weirdly, this is... totally unrelated, really, that I'd also written down another discussion point this week to do with a bus or a coach. This is odd because we seems like we've organised this, but we haven't. So
what do they call them? PSVs, don't they? Public Service Vehicles.
Yeah, PSVs. So let's talk about...
PSV Corner.
Let's talk about the number of the beast, Richard. Let's talk about the number of the beast. Now, the number of the beast... is 666, is it not?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or is it? Because I've got a really boring book next to my bed called the QI Book of General Ignorance, and I've got to say, I thought it was going to be really interesting, but I'd say it's about 60% boring. However...
Oh, really?
Well, yeah, it sends me to sleep, and that's good for me. 666 has been the symbol of the dreaded Antichrist, right? However... it's the wrong number. According to this book, in 2005, a new translation of the earliest known copy of the Book of Revelation clearly shows it to be 616, not 666.
What?
The 1700-year-old papyrus was recovered from the rubbish dumps of the city of Oxyrhynchus in Egypt, I've probably said that wrong, and deciphered by a paleographical research team from the University of Birmingham. And if the new number is correct, it will not amuse those who have just spent a small fortune avoiding the old one. And the reason why there's a coach connection here, because in America, the Highway of the Beast, Highway 666, was renamed 491. That's okay. But in Moscow, off of Russia, the Moscow Transport Department may not be glad to know that in 1999, they picked a new number for the jinxed 666 city bus route. Guess what they renamed it?
Is it 616?
Yes, it is.
God damn.
It really is. It's bus route 616 off of Moscow Transport. So, or Transport.
I thought this was going to be like that story about the Porsche 911 was originally the 901, and then Peugeot went, oh no, we own all numbers with zero in the middle.
And what, so
say BMW had a quick word with the devil and went, sorry, you might want to do a very low-powered 6 Series in the future so you can piss off.
No, they actually said, actually, we'd like to do a big engine one, the 6.6 litre 6. So I'm afraid you're going to have to, can you just rebrand the Satan? Is that okay? Can we just have a satanic rebrand? And well, you know, you've got to downsize now. So Satan could say, oh, look, I'm still really evil and all that, but I'm going smaller capacity, possibly forced induction, maybe, you know, compound turbo, something like that.
Because they have made a 6.6 litre V12 in the past.
Well, there we go.
So it's amazing that they never thought to cram it into the 6 Series just so they could have the 666i.
Can you imagine how many people would never buy that? It'd be terrifying.
Well, but then that strange Jaguar that we've been sent pictures of quite a few times, it's all covered in sort of Satanist things and skulls. And
oh, gosh.
That'd be a shoo-in for a buyer from that person, people, whoever they are.
Weird people.
Here's one for you.
Yeah.
I just wondered, because it happened to me the other day, have you ever taken the long way around in the car because you wanted to have a look at an interesting car or thing?
Oh, shit, yes. Probably on a monthly basis.
Good. Yeah,
because pees my kids off.
Yes. Well, I was dropping my kids, because it was half term last week, and I was dropping my kids at a holiday club, and I had to take a right turn into a road, but just beyond the junction I was turning into, I could see a Copart lorry backed into an access road to a block of flats. And I was like, ooh, a Copart lorry. I wonder what it's picking up. Because I'm imagining there's something that's gone rotten and is being binned off.
Yeah.
And it probably wasn't something very interesting. But if I just couldn't resist. I was like, I wonder what they're hauling away. So having dropped the kids, rather than just go back the way I came, I took a quite circuitous route so that I could loop round and come past the flats from the other direction, only to find the Copart truck had gone and there was no sign of what it had hauled away.
Oh, bollocks.
And I was actually a little bit pissed off about it. I was like, if only I'd been quicker, I could have seen, like, you know, some really mossy PT Cruiser being dragged with a jammed handbrake onto the back of this lorry. But no.
If you ever want to cruise around a yard like that, I'm quite friendly with Synetic. They've got some serious racks of glee going on there. If you ever fancy yourself up at their HQ in Doncaster, I'll treat you to an afternoon out.
Treat me.
I'll treat you. We'll have a bag of chips and we'll walk around some racks of dead cars.
Oh, man. I'd love that.
Yeah, it's actually really good.
Maybe after we've had the chips, can we have a mug of tea? And you have to hold it with both hands to keep your hands warm.
You'll have a mug of tea, but I might have a bottle of pop.
I thought you were going to say a bottle of scotch.
Yes, well, we could have.
Wandering around a scrapyard getting slowly shit-faced on bells.
I'd really enjoy that. And then we get picked up by Ray Maddox afterwards in some kind of shit people carrier, Chrysler Voyager, with a faux leather jacket on.
Oh, man. I'm really, really hopeful that somebody writes in and remembers Ray Maddox and it wasn't just me. I've not been having some kind of strange fever dream. I'm going to type in...
I love the fact that you remembered all the antics of the school coach saga, and it was a really big part of mine too. We had I remember one time, I won't go into it too much detail, but I remember one time that the rule was if it's snowing or really frosty, if the bus is more than half an hour late, you're permitted to go home and not come into school that day. So we used to hope and pray that, you know, the clock would strike half past, I don't know whatever time it was, half past eight, half past seven, and we could all just run. And one time the clock struck half past seven, okay, and it had been snowing. It was quite snowy. So we were all ready to go on the Quantock Hills in our with our sledges. We were all fired up to do it.
Yeah.
And just as we all started like cheering, we saw the coach come round the corner. Oh. And it was actually crossed up. I remember it now. It was like a scene from a rally stage. The coach, it was maroon and brown two-tone. It was a Plaxton's Paramount. And I remember it was being driven by a Northern Irish driver we used to have called Paddy, of course. And Paddy genuinely... No one could understand what he said. It was quite sad, really, because he was in the West Country and none of us could understand what he said. So Paddy came flying down the road and we all made the decision within about 2 seconds of it coming out around that corner of run, just run. Right? we haven't seen it. It's half past. We're going.
No.
So we ran.
Code of silence.
We ran, but the coach was trying to chase us because obviously he'd probably gone through hell to get there on time. And we were the first pickup. But we just ran. We ran and we hid in a hedge. And we spent the rest of that day, I'll put my hand up and admit, we spent the rest of that day doing some awesome sledging. I want to say a massive thank you to Stuart Hamilton, which is my friend Richard Hamilton's dad, who'd had a day off that day, and he's one of these people whose job was to demonstrate new farm implements to farmers, and he had a brand new at the time Isuzu Trooper, first generation. Oh, and he said, tell you what, boys, I'll put it in four-wheel drive low and I'll drive you all the way to the top of the Quantocks and you can spend the whole afternoon up there sledging. How's that? We were like, yeah.
So, what a legend.
So we did. We went up the steepest, most dangerous hills to sledge down. I sledged so fast that, you know, when you can't see because your eyes are watering so hard, genuinely was going that fast. And all because of Stuart Hamilton in the Isuzu Trooper company car. So legends. Legends, good memories.
Good old Stuart.
Sweet, sweet legend. Sweet, sweet memories. So yeah,
good.
So much coach chat. Bloody hell!
I know. A bit too much. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I met someone the other day. I was just talking to someone, introduced me to their sister who I'd not met before, and I was just having a small talk chat. And she said, "Oh, my sister tells me that you have a podcast." And I said, "Yes, I do." Yeah. She said, "What's it about?" And I went. And I took a bit too long and she went, well, she told me it was about cars, as if like I'd forgotten and she was having to prompt me. And I went, well, it's sort of about cars, but...
sort of.
Then again, it's not. That's the thing.
I do that.
It's really hard to say. And she went, oh, I'll have to give it a listen. And I was like...
I always have to feed in afterwards because it always sounds very lacklustre when you describe it like that. I go, it's quite popular. It's become quite popular, strangely.
Yeah.
But yes, we don't entirely know what it's about. Sorry.
No, we don't. Science has yet to discover that. But anyway, we keep hoping. We should probably start to move towards the exits on this one.
No, don't do
Thank
that.
You to everybody who's bought tickets to our Scottish live show near Glasgow in next week? Hang on, week after. 28th of February.
Yeah.
Giffnock. And there are, at the time we're speaking, there are still... tickets, but not many. I'm a little worried by the time this goes out they will in fact have gone, but let's assume not. We'll put some more links out on the socials if there are still tickets available, but thank you to everybody who's bought them so far. Thank you to the man in the Kia Sportage who I let through a gap this week and who thanked me by doing finger pistols, which I thought was an interesting technique.
Oh, brilliant.
I'd like to see more of that if possible. It's a really amazing thing to see. I was like, I actually sort of, you know, you do a kind of, your brain takes a moment to process. Did he finger pistols from a Kia Sportage?
That is amazing.
Anyway, right, well, let's bring this into land. But before we do, I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Ejaculate Milkshake Show, which he consumes enormous quantities of flavoured dairy drink until it has a peculiar effect on his bodily functions. If that's not to your taste, then there's always The Late Break Show. Lots of interesting videos on there about cars and people who love them. What have we got this week?
Oh, gosh. yeah, what have we got? Oh, I know what we've got. We've got, we've got another BMW barn find that's 80s and... I will reveal. It is an E34-5 series. It's called a Hertger or a Hertger H5. And I don't know. Oh. It's a German tuner car that it's not. It wasn't buried under detritus or anything, but it had been owned by the same family for quite some time, and it was in very, very good condition. So if you like your white pinstriped tuner 80s BMWs, it's probably one for you. And I brought along a friend of mine who's a long time listener to this channel, Walter Krobock, who's an authority on German cars off of the 80s and the 90s. And Walter had a good afternoon with me, so I want to say thanks to Walter for coming along.
Excellent.
And all that. I
look forward to that.
Yeah, and if you don't like that, Walter, there's plenty of other things to
Second thing I have got to tell you is that, as you probably know, I have a book out recently called Boring Car Trivia 4. Lots of fascinating facts in there, or not so fascinating if you're not that interested, but please buy it anyway. It's on sale through Amazon as an ebook or a paperback, or you can buy the paperback through our merch shop, where you can also buy t-shirts and stickers and mugs and our new hats, as detailed in a song that's coming up in a minute.
Amazing.
So go there and do that. The third thing I've got to tell you, do you know what the biggest island in the world is?
The biggest island in the world is? It's not Australia, is it?
No, so this is a bit of a funny one, because yes, I suppose so, but Australia is counted as a continent in most circles. Although it is also an island. The biggest island in the world is Greenland.
Oh, is it? You ever been?
No, have you?
No, I've never been to Greenland. No. I've been to Iceland, but not Greenland.
Oh, have you? I'd love to go to Iceland, but I don't know.
Iceland was cool. Not, I mean, temperature-wise, yes, but also really interesting. don't want to do it disjustice.
Do you know what the ninth biggest island in the world is?
Did you say the ninth?
Yes, no. It's a bit specific, but...
No, I don't know what the ninth...
I'll give you a clue. We're sitting on it now.
What, off of the UK?
Britain is the ninth biggest island in the world.
What?
Which is surprising. You'd think there'd be more.
You've got a quick list. You've got time to just rattle off the 8th, the 7th, the 6th, the 5th, the 4th, and the 3rd, and the 7th.
So can if you want.
Please.
It's Greenland, New Guinea, Borneo, Madagascar, Baffin Island off Canada, Sumatra, Honshu, one of the Japanese... Is that an archipelago? I don't know. Anyway. Victoria Island, again off Canada, and then it's Britain.
What I would say here is I think I have to go to Canada this year. I keep saying I'll go. There's some content I want to make for the Late Break show, and it just has to happen. It just has to happen. I've owned Canadian-built cars, but I've never been to Canada.
Have you?
Yeah, my factory right-hand drive Chevy Impala, my first Impala, because I've had two, was built in Canada. They used to assemble all the right-hand drive ones for South Africa and other areas. And the Canadian...
Interesting.
Yeah, the Canadian-built cars often used to have reinforced chassis for harder climate. So you often refer to the Canadian frames as being the ones to have if you were going to put a new frame under your low rider. You'd use the Canadian spec frame. Because, of course, in America, the chassis number is not relevant. It's the body number that's more important. Do you see what I mean? So it's you can switch a chassis if it rotted or got bent, but the body's the thing that keeps its individuality. Yeah. Is that interesting enough for you? Are you ready to turn off now?
Yeah, I'd say that's interesting. Well, I mean, for fuck's sake, I've just been listing islands. I don't know what's interesting or not. But,
I want to know more about Smoking Martin.
We'll come back to him next week. But Victoria Island, which just pips us in island size, I've been there, and it is very beautiful. But a lot of Canada is very beautiful. Although, you know, it's also very big and there's not a lot. We were going to get the train from the middle of Canada to Vancouver, I think, and a Canadian friend of ours went, "Don't bother, you'll get bored." So we flew instead, because it's just big expanses. I mean, we stayed on a farm once out on the prairies, and it's it has that sort of very dramatic big sky beauty to it, but perhaps that wears off after a while. I don't know.
I'd love that.
Well, let's both go to Canada. We'll just go to
Canada.
Shall we? Yeah, just drive.
We've got a couple of Canadian listeners, I know, because we've had letters from them in the past and we've had messages on social media. So maybe we should do Smith and Sniff off of Canada.
I just realised I haven't been to Victoria Island. I've been to Vancouver Island. That's an entirely different thing because that's off the west coast. That's getting confused. The capital of Vancouver Island is Victoria, I think. So that's probably why I was getting confused. But it's all nice, and it's full of Canadians who, as we know, are the world's nicest people. So
yeah, maybe we should take a Crown Victoria to Victoria just for stupid, pointless lols.
You're watching Literal Smith and Sniff. Right, yeah. We really should wrap this up, but thank you ever so much for listening. We will do this all again next week, and then we will see some of you that week on the 28th of February, Wednesday the 28th, at our live show in Glasgow. But until the next episode, I've tied myself in knots here, for fact's sake. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye, guys. Thanks very much. Also known as...
Cheers, mate. Thanks, mate. Bye. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. Mugs, T-shirts, stickers. And now we do hats, too. They're very stylish. This may come as a surprise. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. You won't believe your eyes. Smith and Sniff have merchandise. Sadly, we don't do pies. But Smith and Sniff have merchandise. One day we might sell ties. Smith and Sniff have merchandise.
Got a bun in the oven. I'm gonna have to go soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.